Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Mango Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima and Simran. How are you doing?
Hey, everyone.
Hello, hello. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I know Halima's just had a four-hour drive, but, you know.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm so tired.
That's what you get for going to the bad place.
Do you guys like long-distance driving?
I used to be, like, you've asked the right question. I used to be... it used to be my favorite thing in the world. I used to love it.
Why?
It just clear my head. Like, I'd have like between Liverpool and Slough, like that's like 4 hours, maybe longer sometimes. And I would just do that without breaks, and I would just have usually the weekend on, which is any music, and I would just belt my heart out. And I just feel like it was like 4 hours where I didn't have to think because I was doing something that was like productive or like getting something done, but like I could just chill and be like switched off. I used to love it.
It's a bit hit and miss for me.
So what's changed?
Now I just, because now it's like, I don't do it as much. So I think I've like kind of lost the passion for it. But like, I don't know, now I'm just old. Now I can't sit for that long. I've got to stop and stretch my legs and stuff. And like, I don't know, like now as well, I don't listen to music how I used to either. So I feel like I'm just like, oh, I can't run out of good music. Like, I don't know.
Do you guys stop when you're doing long distance journeys, or do you always just do it in one go?
I try not to.
Yeah, I prefer not to.
Yeah, I rarely ever stop. I don't know. I feel like long distance driving is a bit hit and miss for me. It depends on like if I've been driving a lot in the days before it and like my state of mind before it. Like if I'm in a rush and I'm like driving someone, I need to get somewhere at a certain time, then I don't really enjoy it because I'm just like, I'm just thinking about the fact that I'm in a rush. Whereas if I'm doing it leisurely and maybe I've not driven too much in the few days before, like I'm not so tired of driving, then I do enjoy it.
Yeah, I don't mind it. I really don't mind it. And also, I kind of like driving. It's kind of like my personality in a way. Like
really?
Amongst my friends, I am the driver kind of thing. I was like, I passed my test relatively early in the year for me. And like, since I was always driving people around, it's just kind of stuck to it. And I also don't mind driving people around. So it's kind of, I feel very much like at home. I feel very much at home in the car. I will say as well that, I mean, I drive quite, not a long, a long commute, an hour and a half for work. It's relatively
that is
long.
Very long.
To do it on a regular basis, it's long.
Yeah, but
it ends up being longer, probably, innit?
I've got used to it, but I will say that the one time that I did wasn't used to it was like, it was the, basically, I stayed over in Birmingham when it was my work Christmas due. And then I worked in the day.
Yeah, you told us the story.
And then I drove back and I was like, I actually am not okay. I need to stop at a service station and go to sleep. That was the one time where I was like, I can't do this.
I mean, to be fair, you were probably hungover.
I think it was more exhaustion, you know? It was because like I had my work Christmas due, which obviously I had a couple of drinks at, and then I had to be in work at like 8 the next morning as well. Ooh, so it was just constant. Speaking of being tired, I've just come from halfway across the world. I've been in India.
What's that? When did you land?
Yesterday at around 4. So
how long were you gone for? 2 weeks? 10 days?
10 days. So it's not too bad. I mean, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about, actually, was it's weird kind of the way that we obviously as a South Asian oriented podcast discuss obviously India. And I think we obviously read about it a lot in the news, and there's a lot of negativity ultimately, because a lot of the times that we talk about it, it's when something wrong is happening. But it was weird to kind of be there and kind of not feel as much of that kind of weight on me as I thought there would be. Do you know what I mean? I kind of expected to be there and kind of feel the weight of all these negative things, which I suppose speaks to my own like kind of privilege and also the fact that
I was gonna say that
foreigner. But I will say, I think Simran, you mentioned before about how crazy it is in America, the amount of political visual stuff there is in the UK. I'll say India is on another level. Like, everywhere I turn, there was Modi on the wall, here, there, everywhere. And also, literally, also posters of him and Trump as well, together. Like,
is it more than the last time you went? Because you obviously went recently. Was it last year?
Yeah. You know what I will say? I don't know if it's because, but it's weird because last time was just before the election. So I don't know why it's more, but it definitely is more. Other than that, it was a pleasant trip. I managed to enjoy the wedding, managed to go to this resort for the actual wedding. So that was nice.
Oh, I can't relate.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I just saw your Instagram dump.
Sun, lots of nice food.
Why actually, was your turban so long?
All of them are. No, you know, like, the buggeries, they always have, like, that little bit tangled off, and it's because the wind was blowing, it's like
everywhere. Oh, it just looks crazy.
Yeah. But
is it supposed to be down his arm?
No, honestly. Like, that wasn't, there was some that were, like, longer. It's because it was all done by hand as well. So, yeah. Like, it was, I only ever worn the cut, what they call pre-made ones before. This was the first time I'd got it actually done by someone there.
What about you for your wedding?
It was pre-made. Unless you're in the know. I don't know if maybe the Sikh community is more in the know as actual people that can, like, do the whole buggery, like, doing it.
I definitely could have found you someone.
Yeah, no, they were like...
They charge a hell of a lot, though.
I think that was the other thing. They were like, it's not worth doing it. We'll just get pre-made ones. But that was a whole thing because my head's so big, so it was hard to find. We ordered one originally, and it didn't fit. So then Mianca had to go to... I said this in my wedding.
Oh, I remember this. Wimsor Road, yeah.
Literally on, like, a few hours before the cocktail night to get one. And even that was still... It wasn't big enough, but we made it work.
Speaking of, I want to know where Mianca's lingo is from.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So... it's her Massey, so her mum's sister. She is a designer. Yeah, Sona. What are they called? They're called Closet Essentials by SS. They basically designed half the stuff at our wedding as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
Or like, I think, I don't know if it's more design, it's more like they make it. I think a lot of the time Mianca goes to them with the ideas and it's like, can you do this? And they do it. So if you have
one... Oh my God, I'm going to follow them and...
If you want anything, make
Because I've got weddings coming up this year. I do. My sister and my cousin's sister are getting married this year, so...
let us know.
Oh, I definitely will.
Yeah, it was manic, I'm not going to lie. Like, it was always going to be manic being there. Not only for an Asian wedding, but being there... living
as a family,
and with the... This time it was the groom's family. But made it through the other side. I think it was definitely, I think because in my head, not the last time I was in India, but the time before, it was for the groom's sister's wedding. So in 2017, and at that point, me and Mianca had only been together for a year. So it was a very different kind of environment. So it was nice to kind of attend a wedding in India as husband and wife kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just feel a lot more adult about it.
Wait, so did Mianca come to the first one? Oh, you went to the first one, I mean.
Yeah, so I went to the first, because literally the first time I met Mianca's mum, bear in mind, this is like, so this is literally around this time, so Mianca's birthday in 2017, so Mianca's Mianca's just turned 20, I'm like 20 and a bit, meet Mianca's parents for the first time, and her mum's just like, oh yeah, she comes to the wedding in India, and it's like, yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, so dizzy.
That's very
so
progressive.
It is so dizzy, but also like progressive as well, because, and it was a really nice thing for her to do, but all her family look back on it now, and we like laugh about it, because it was not very well thought out in that.
It's almost like, thank God you guys actually got married in the end.
Yeah, but even aside from that, it was like, she was like, yeah,
just come. Scribble you out all the family photos, imagine.
I know. Yeah. But like, but it's like, she said that and it was like, yeah, cool, I'm going, whatever. But then it was like, she didn't even tell her parents, so Mianca's grandparents, that I was her boyfriend. So literally I went up to the grandparents and was like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. And obviously they were like, who is this person? And then Mianca was like to her mum, did you even tell them that he was coming? She was like, no. And it's like, why would you like not mention that kind of thing? So it wasn't really well thought out or executed, but it was a nice thing. Anyway.
Yeah, no, but this is what I mean. Like, thank God you guys got married to each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen people like bring like a serious at the time like partner to functions and then they're in all the pictures and then the couple don't work out and they're still in all the pictures.
I think that's the thing. I think that it is a big risk. And I think
it's a very big risk.
It's the problem with like wedding photos as well, because you're always so limited as to like the time, particularly like say wedding photos with the family, that like, you're like, okay, we need to get this family done, then the next, and it's like, do you include the partners or not? Because it's like, you want them to be there, but then also it's like, what if? You've got to
chuck them on the end.
Like, that's a good compromise, actually. I should have thought of that, like, for our wedding. Yeah, compromise. But, yeah. But these days with AI, you can probably recreate it anyway. Like,
the Google phones do that.
Yeah, I've seen I always see the adverts for that, but I've never seen it in person. But so I don't know if it's as good.
I cannot imagine that it works as well as it looks in the advert.
Exactly, I'm very skeptical.
Well, at least they have the feature. iPhones don't even have it.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys think as well about this whole thing of iPhone saying that, oh, the UK government is they're giving them access to access everyone's iCloud data if they request it, kind of thing? Have you not seen this?
This is why I never trusted the cloud. I thought the cloud was dodgy since its conception. However old Simran was onto something.
Well, basically, Halima, I think what it is that the UK government has said that Apple needs to give them access to the cloud if they request it, kind of thing. So it's like the level of encryption that the cloud currently has, they're saying that's not okay. Like, you need to, we basically need to be able to access it.
Is that legal?
I think it is legal.
But then I feel like with the terms and conditions for iCloud, users would have agreed to give that data to Apple. They wouldn't have agreed to give it to the government. Yeah. So it goes against the T's and C's.
But then I'm also like, it's obviously not going to be, unless it's like extreme circumstances, like if someone's committing like some kind of extreme terrorism crime. So in that mind, I'm kind of like, because everyone's like freaking out about it and they're like, oh, like it's time to get rid of my iPhone, blah blah blah, and I'm kind of like, okay, so the whole like the whole Congo thing wasn't enough to get rid of the iPhone, but then potentially looking at your photos is. But I'm like, realistically, like, come on, like, you're not like a detective, like they're not trying to hack your phone, let's be real. Like,
yeah, I agree, but I guess it's also just like data ownership. Like, you've consented to give it to one party, your government like now can access it if they wanted to. Obviously, you're probably not going to be a person of interest, but
yeah. But I think it's like, what was it we were saying recently, where it's like, oh yeah, it's TikTok, and it's like people are like, oh no, I work for myself. I've got my own business on TikTok. But it's like, no, you might be self-employed, but ultimately you still work for the man through TikTok, kind of thing. It's the same as that. Mm. Everything's got layers to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, well, India overall, well, positive thumbs up. And also, it was the first time that I've been that I didn't get Delhi Belly. Like, every time
congratulations.
Yeah, every time that I've been, I've always kind of got a bit of a dodgy stomach. But this time, no, so.
You're becoming a local.
Oh my God, yeah. Big question, Carlos.
Go on.
Did you watch EastEnders?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I did. For those of you that don't know, I spent the latter bit of last week's episode complaining to Simran about the fact that Bianca's family had decided to have a wedding abroad.
So selfish
to have a wedding abroad during the 40th anniversary week of EastEnders, including
how dare they?
Including
the what
a live
anniversary
episode
week?
40th.
But tell her what they did. Tell her what they did.
EastEnders had their 50th anniversary like 15 years ago.
No, they had...
Or 10 years ago.
They had their 30th anniversary 10 years ago.
It was Corrie.
Corrie was in 2020 because they've been going since 1960.
Oh, EastEnders only 40 years?
Yeah, it only started in 1985.
Okay, cool. What's going on? Give us a little... Because I watched it like as a teenager on and off, but I've not watched it for like probably like a decade.
I watched it when it was in its prime.
That's when I watched it. But I, for the past decade, I don't know, but I know it's seen a bit of a resurgence recently. Yeah. So.
No, it is good.
Give us a lowdown.
I think I said as well, like, EastEnders is just, it's a lot more memeable culture. It's a lot more like, do you know Love of Huns on Instagram? Do you know that, like, Hun culture? It's very much kind of the Twitter gaze, like that. It's very much like it's camp. It's like, it's that, and that's why I enjoy it a lot. It is like this. It's a lot more like memeable stuff on it, and I think that's why like I've enjoyed it and why I've stuck with it. Whereas with Corrie, you'll remember that I was watching that, and I've now dropped that because
Corrie is memeable because of how bad the acting is and how ridiculous the plot lines are.
Yeah, but the thing is with EastEnders, the plot lines are still ridiculous, but it's fine, like because it's funny, and also it's just a bit more fast paced. I think I enjoy that, and you know that I would want to stand by the Mancunian thing if I could, but I can't. Like, it's just not good. I'm sorry to say. However, yeah, what happened? It was really good.
Did you cry? I heard a lot of people cry.
Yeah, I didn't cry.
Talking about it, but I didn't know what's going on.
Cry, but I was very upset because basically, the main event of it was that there was an explosion, which obviously there was going to be an explosion.
Oh my god, they love a little explosion.
Yeah. However, it resulted ultimately in the death of Martin Fowler.
How will I recover?
But in all seriousness, it was really sad because he is. Ultimately,
don't mock. Look at Carla.
No, but it's because there are. First of all, there are characters on that show that are like evil, and you would enjoy to see die. And then there are also characters on that show which add nothing, so you would enjoy to see them die too. He was neither of that. He was actually
a good man,
a good parent. He was good vibes and all of that, and now he's died. And it's just, and it's also sad because him and Stacey Slater were meant to be together, and in his dying moments, they were like, yeah, we're together, and then he died. And that was during the live episode, which literally, the reason why I was also annoyed about this wedding was because, it was funny, I was like to Simran, like, the most important days are the 19th and the 20th, and then she was like, what, of the wedding? I was like, yeah, but also the most important days of EastEnders are the 19th and the 20th. So the 20th was actually the live episode, which was set during this explosion. And so I actually watched that live, because I was in, the wedding had finished by then, so I was like in my hotel room basically watching it. And literally, I saw Martin die, and I was like, no. Like, I was so, like, depressed, honestly.
It was a lovely way to round off the party.
It was, and then I had to go to the after party, and I really wasn't ready for it. Like,
I had to go to the after party, and I just
Martin
Fowler just died.
Mianca dragged me there. I really was so depressed, and I was like, I'm not
nightmare
in the...
Nightmare wedding guest.
I
don't ever come to my wedding with that energy.
I've told you, don't arrange it around EastEnders.
All the important things in your life, you're going to have to tell me so you're actually somewhat happy on my wedding day.
Yeah.
I wish I was this passionate about something.
Anything.
No.
Like, anything at all, just to feel something. Carlos was feeling a lot.
I mean, obviously I was drunk because it was like after the wedding. I was drunk when I was watching this. I was like, no. But
heightened emotions.
I can just imagine that on your knees, laptop in front of you, just like hands in the air.
Not even. It was iPhone in hand, threw it across the room.
Oh my God.
VPN connection gone. Like, no.
I bet you were buzzing when you got out of the party in time for that episode.
And I'm not gonna lie, like,
you would have left.
No, I mean, it was the reception, so it was like it.
The reception.
No, this is the thing as well. The way the Indian weddings work in India, I feel like the Sangeet is like the main party event. The reception, actually, to all the weddings I've been to in India, the reception's always kind of been kind of like a bit more relaxed kind of thing. It's interesting, but yeah, all in all, EastEnders 40th anniversary was really good. Ultimately, I got a lot of what I wanted from it, but then that was just, it played with my emotions. And now all this week, they're basically, it's the aftermath of his death, and it's just all really sad. And just, yeah, check in on your friends that watch EastEnders.
Sorry.
Yeah. I had two friends that watched it, and they were giving live updates on a group chat that no one else was talking in at the time. It was just them, and I kind of got the gist of what happened.
Do you know whether they were Team Jack or Team Ravi?
Okay, they're talking about a baby.
Okay, no, Sonia's baby. I don't care about that. Okay. Right.
what's this rivalry?
Basically, it was a cool element actually of the live episode. So obviously, the fact that it's live, they can rehearse it, but ultimately, it's all like happening there and then kind of thing.
I'm gonna ask her.
Streaming live, but they included this really cool element, which was the night before the live episode. They opened a vote, and it was who this character Denise ends up with. Is it Jack or Ravi?
Oh, I know Denise.
The public voted for it.
Yeah, so the public all voted from Wednesday night until literally 7:10 on Thursday. So then there was 20 minutes before the live episode where they were like, right, this is the result, this is the direction that this is going to go in. So it is.
That is really interesting. See the way modern technology is like impacting television.
Exactly.
I thought that was really interesting. So who did she end up with then?
Jack, which I was glad about, because obviously you'd think I was meant to be rooting for Ravi, because obviously
the Indian guy.
Yeah, but
is he the Panasar?
He's like related to them. Yeah, he's not technically not Panasar, but yeah.
They're only brown people and they're all related.
Yeah. But he's obviously really good looking and like is just really. A lot of people like him because he's very, like, macho and...
Who, Ravi?
Yeah, people find him really attractive.
I'm Googling.
He's also a bit of a toy boy because he's, like, late 30s and Denise is, like, mid-50s, so...
I wouldn't say, but I get it, but not for me.
Basically, a lot of people like him for that reason. They enjoy watching him on their screens. However... Her and Jack, they've just been together in the past. They have, like, they're a bit more similar in age. They have a good thing going on. And I just really like that. It's a bit more of a, like, a solid vibe rather than Ravi, which is a bit more of, like, danger. And also, Ravi
is... You want a bit of stability for your girl, Denise.
Here. Exactly. Like, what's she playing at? She's in her mid-50s. Like, come on. Like, you don't want a moment of passion. You want Jack, who's going to, like, be with you till the end. But also, Ravi, the mother of his kids, is on the show as well, and she's a really likable character. Like, she's...
Oh, so you want them to sort out.
Exactly. We want them to end up together.
For the kids.
Yeah, the kids are a bit annoying, but, like, yeah, we still want them to end up together.
Can I just say, Carlos has been speaking about EastEnders for exactly 10 minutes now.
Right,
I just should never have asked.
Fine, moving on.
I watched a film, guys, and in the cinema, guess what? Isn't that crazy?
Which cinema?
It was Bridget...
Which film?
Odeon and Maidenhead.
Which film? Bridget Jones, right.
Yeah, I watched Bridget Jones, a new one. Had to say, I was underwhelmed. I'm, like, low-key a Bridget Jones fan.
Everyone's loving it.
No, it was good, and I was fighting back tears at a couple of points, because I don't know if anyone knows, but it's low-key sad.
Why fight them?
It's definitely not funny, like the last ones. Like, it was like, blow a little bit of air out your nose funny, not like, fully laughing. Do you know what I mean?
Isn't this one meant to be quite sad, though, because she's grieving? Yeah.
Well sad.
Yeah, RIP Colin Firth.
Oh, I wasn't going to spoil it, but yeah.
Well, I thought everyone knows that already.
Oh, I didn't know that until I watched it.
Oh. Sorry.
What's everyone's favorite cinema?
As in,
I like the one that I went to. It was an Odeon one, but it had the big seats
because
that like recline.
Because I go to the cinema like I would say on average like once a month, so I'm a big cinema fan, and I feel quite strongly about like the rankings of cinemas. Namely, I feel quite strongly about how, can I use a bad word?
Go on.
How shit Cineworld is. Who no. is keeping Cineworld?
Couldn't tell you the last time I went to one of those.
Well, the thing is,
the worst cinema. And I go to cinemas. Listen, I know what I'm talking about. Cineworld is so shit, and it's so overpriced as well.
I feel like all cinemas are overpriced, aren't they?
No. See, I feel like what I mean, Carlos. Cheap. You guys don't know anything. Firstly,
no, I don't. I don't really go to cinema.
I'll tell you. Firstly, Odeon always have deals on. If you've got Amazon Prime, you could do like 2 for £10. If you've got Vodafone, you could do like 4 for £16. They always have deals on. So Odeon is very, very fine. It's very affordable. Odeon is probably my top because yeah, like it's reliable. It's like you can choose between like standard seating, luxe seating, and the food at Odeon is also good. Their nachos, 10 out of 10. View is very good because they are very, really, really cheap. Like the view at Printworks, for example, I've been there like a few times, and it's literally like the cheapest ticket is like £6 or something like that. It's between like £6 to £12 depending on like how thingy it is, and all their seats are recliner seats. It's amazing. They're huge recliner seats.
Yeah, I like that.
So
one.
View is good, but the food at View isn't the best. So it's like, it's good for if you can't get to Odeon.
Bring right. your own snacks.
Every man is good for a like. You know,
if you want to splash out a little bit, you want to...
It's expensive.
It's very expensive. That's it. It's all right for, like, if you've got a bit of disposable income, you want to spend it a little bit. You want to be extra cozy. Or, like, if a man is paying, you know?
But that's when every man is fine. I have gone to it, like, twice. There's one kind of near me. I've gone to it, like, twice. Because the sofas are, like, legit beds, they can't, they look really, like, dirty. It doesn't feel great, like, oh, lying. It feels like I'm lying in someone else's bed.
Okay,
very weird.
Fairs,
no, it doesn't feel very clean.
Yeah, it's not my top choice. I wouldn't go for it. Sydney World is just right at the bottom of the list. Awful. Don't know who's keeping it in business.
The thing is, I think the reason why it's still in business is because what I'm about to say, which is that when I go to the cinema, I'm not thinking about which cinema it is. I'm thinking which one is the closest to me. Like, when Cine World is right down the road for me, I'm not going to not go to it. Do you know what I mean?
No, it's very close to me as well. I will, out of principle, never go to Cine World. Wow. And it's so overpriced, you can't get deals for Cine World tickets.
I hear
anywhere.
Both viewpoints.
I will say Cine World.
Yes, if you're a frequent cinema goer, which I would say I am. So for me...
Cine World, if you have a Tesco club card... you can use the points to pay towards that. Me and Mayanka saw the Barbie movie completely for free because we
that's
just
the only...
used
I'd rather
Tesco
spend it on
club
groceries.
Points.
That's like the only good thing you can get on Tesco Club Card because Tesco Club Card is rubbish.
Mm.
I love Tesco Club Card.
No, I like it for the discounts
in
I get.
Vouchers right now.
Yeah, but I like it for the discounts I get in store and then they give me a letter, like my little Tesco Club Card wrapped every couple of months or whatever and I get like £2.50 off.
Enough talk about cinemas. Speaking about developments in technology, as Halima was before, we touched on it briefly, but let's return to this because I think there have even been new developments in this. Gen Z marketing, specifically in relation to Duolingo and the death of the owl.
They just gave me a notification.
Like,
did they just now?
Yeah.
Because thing is, last time Simran brought to the table, she was like, oh, yeah, the Duolingo owl died. And we were like, what? But I feel like there's been so much, like, media attention towards it. It actually is one of the best marketing things I think I've seen.
But I think the Duolingo account is what has started this whole, like, Gen Z marketing thing. Like, the fact that, like, you don't have to
have
a massive marketing and advertisement expenditure now, that you can kind of just be in TikTok comments or have a social media team that will make a TikTok. You don't have to do, like, a massive grand-scale production. It's kind of, like, set this whole new trend of, like, low-effort but high-impact marketing.
I'll say them, but I feel like the OGs were Aldi. You don't know what Aldi, like, how they literally...
Kevin the Carrot.
No, not even Kevin the Carrot, but Aldi have always been just responding to people in comments and just kind of... Remember the whole, like, call
like
it...
Ryanair.
I know,
Ryanair, they just kind of... they at people, like, how Aldi was atting Marks and Spencers during the whole Colin the Caterpillar thing. They were literally engaged in a legal battle. Literally, like, proper thing. And they were still atting them on Twitter, like, oh, why are you doing this, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, Ryanair as well. But I don't like Ryanair as much because Ryanair, actually, I don't rate. Like, but Aldi...
You know what it is? It's like all of these companies, like, the marketing industry is a huge industry, right? And all of these companies are investing, like, you know, I'm talking conglomerates, like businesses, huge, huge companies are investing up to probably like millions of pounds in really complex, dynamic marketing techniques when really all along, all they needed to do was put a Gen Z behind a keyboard. Yeah.
Because the Duolingo social media person made some TikTok about like her journey and her like journey within Duolingo and advertising and marketing. Like, she's come like a really... First of all, don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure she's South Asian. I think she's Pakistani.
Oh, wow.
But she made this whole thing about her journey in the company and how she's moved around and stuff and what she's doing now. Now she's like head of social media or something. It was her idea to kind of make these like very relevant to Gen Z, very like punchy, kind of pushing the boundaries, slightly rude TikToks. And look how it's worked out.
Props to...
I think it's great because it just gets people to engage like on a really accessible level. Like, you don't have to sit through adverts. Like, you don't have to turn on the TV, watch a show, and then sit through the adverts. You know, like, it's literally just as you're scrolling, it's then it's funny, it's relevant, it's like trending. You know.
Yes. Oh my God. She's brown. Zaria Parvez.
Waiting for us. I will say, however, that I want this Duolingo thing to end. Like, I'm like, where is this going? Because the owl's been dead for like 2 weeks now.
It's back now.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah, I got a TikTok today. It had like millions of likes on the account. They revived the owl. And it's gone on a Ozempic.
What?
He's hench now. He's not like a round, fluffy owl. He's like, it's the owl head on like a ripped person's body.
Okay. It's just the fact that none of this is even to do with like learning languages.
But I think that's what the point is. Like, yeah. It makes you think like, oh, what's Duolingo? And like, have a look and like, oh, that owl. And like, that's kind of how like I got on it, because I was like, I heard about like, these like the owl that like threatens you if you don't do your lessons. And then that's when they were in people's comments saying like, if you don't complete your streak, I'll come and find you and kidnap you. Which is crazy.
It is crazy. And I think it's also fun as well that they will do stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, because yeah. I know so many companies will just be reluctant to kind of say things that can be potentially land them in trouble. And I get it. But also the fact that Duolingo is not afraid to push those boundaries and just be a bit funny with it. Like, it's not hurting anyone.
I do like it. And it does make me want to learn my Spanish.
Yeah, moving on. Sheikh Hasina. So,
oh my god,
the former Bangladesh Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina has vowed to return to politics and Bangladesh and criticize the interim government led by Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus.
That's a threat if I ever heard one.
This follows her removal from power last year. Obviously, we know she was forcibly removed from power during the uprising. So Hasina has allegedly accused the interim government of being responsible for violence and injustice in Bangladesh. She stated that she will come back to support the families of victims and ensure justice is served. Quote, I will help every victim's family and make sure those responsible are held accountable. I will return. Perhaps that is why Allah has kept me alive. She's also questioned Muhammad Yunus's ability to govern, claiming that he himself has admitted to struggling in his role, pointing out recent attacks on government buildings and officials as evidence of his lack of leadership. Handing the mic over to our resident Bangladeshi, Halima.
Resident Bangladeshi. Whoever her dealer is, that person needs a raise. Because that is some pretty potent stuff that they've got her on.
It's giving being Delulu is the Salulu.
I don't understand what level, like what kind of the extent of like suspension of disbelief you have to be the kind of causing factor of a national revolution that has seen reverberations through the entire subcontinent. As in, this is a country of like upwards of 170 million people, and the vast majority of them were united in their like disdain and their hatred of and their mistrust of Hasina. And for her at this point to still act as though she is still in the running is literally crazy.
Do you reckon she's responsible for the fact that you were mentioning about how flights between Pakistan and Bangladesh like have resumed? Do you reckon her removal from power has anything to do with that?
Yes, because she was a lot of people like commonly call her like Modi's puppet. So she kind of was like a lot of people will say like in his pocket. Which obviously, given the tensions between Pakistan and India, like kind of, I think, put a cap on diplomatic relations between Bangladesh and Pakistan. But that's just one aspect of it. She was responsible for like corruption on like an insane level, you know, like corruption on a level that engendered a national revolution. Like that just can't be understated. I don't know if we were both kind of like watching the same events unfold or what, because yeah, like I said, I don't understand like what level of delusion you would have to need. I don't think it's going to happen. The people will run her out again. There, obviously, she does have loyalists in the country still, and in the diaspora, obviously. She has people that still are on her side and kind of want to see her come back. But like you have to remember, like, you left in disgrace. Like, you ran away because people were coming for your neck. Like, you didn't leave. You know, it's not just like a temporary thing. They ran you out of your own country that you've been in, like, governing for, like, decades.
Yeah.
Like, let's remember that.
Yeah. So we're saying chances of her actually returning are probably very low.
I don't know. You never know with Bangladesh. You really never know with Bangladesh. I wouldn't be surprised if she did return. I really hope that she doesn't make a return to politics, though.
Yeah. No, I will say that when I saw it, and I sent it in the chat, and I was like, I swear this is giving like Voldemort. I was literally like, I will return.
She gives like Disney villain vibes.
Yeah, but I was gonna say the scenes that ensued after her departure, like the people in her house trying on her clothes and like raiding her house, like the lack of public, like the public respect is just gone. I'd be very surprised if she somehow forces her way back in.
If she does, but this is what I mean, like if she does, it's not a reflection of the fact that the people want her back, more so a reflection of the fact that we still have a broken system that might kind of allow for that, you know, for her to like slip through the cracks a little bit.
Yeah, and also if she has got obviously India on her side, like
that's it. That's why I'm like, you know what, as much as it was a very decisive thing that she was run out of the country, you just never know.
Yeah. Oh well, at least for now, at least we can kind of find a bit of amusement in her lack of awareness in what she's saying.
Tentative amusement. Yeah,
don't want to jinx anything. But speaking of ongoings in the South Asian subcontinent, I wanted to discuss as well something that Halima, you brought to the chat the other week, which was an article that's been published in the Wall Street Journal, which is talking about the ongoing events in Palestine in regards to the Israeli genocide against it. But this article is taking a very interesting stance on things and comparing what's going on to South Asian history. So the title of this article is,
"Oh my God!
If Indians and Pakistanis can relocate, why can't Gazans?" Subtitle, "Population transfers aren't a Trump innovation. There are plenty of examples from the 20th century. Now, I'm not about to pay for Wall Street Journal in order to be able to access this, but from the preview to what I can see, the author, Sadanan Dume, is basically giving examples from the past of forced transfers of populations. Yeah, such as in the 1920s, Greece and Turkey, and also most notably, following World War II, the partition of India, and the forced migrations, that's basically speaking lightly on this, the fleeing of various populations in both India and Pakistan to the other country following the partition of India, which is ultimately due to the failings of the British rule in their departure.
Well, failings, it's not failings, it was by design. Like, they did it on purpose to destabilize the region. And this is what annoys me. This is what pisses me off so much about this, because the two prime examples, I also haven't read the article, but kind of get the gist from what this person has been saying. The two primary examples that they've given, Turkey and Greece and the subcontinent, which is funny that they don't even mention Bangladesh, because I've said it before on the show and I'll say it again, that partition happened on two primary sites, Punjab and Bengal. Punjab is written about over and over and over and over again. No one ever mentions Bengal, which obviously puts a bit of a bee in my bonnet as a Bangladeshi person. However, the two primary examples that they have given, these are ongoing conflicts that they have engendered, conflicts and tension that are ongoing today. Take a look at Cyprus, for example, the Greek, the Turkish communities in Cyprus. Like, that's not a happy ending. That's not a reasonable solution. That has engendered decades worth of martial, social, political and interpersonal conflict that literally exists to this day, that still plagues people's everyday realities to this day. That's firstly. Secondly, the most primary example they gave was of the subcontinent, and it annoys me because it's like people don't actually understand what partition was. People don't actually understand what partition was. People don't actually understand what partition did to the people that went through it. I think that they see it as kind of like a benevolent, kind of largely neutral end to colonialism, which, I mean, we know from polls that were done in this country that people still largely believe was a good thing. And they kind of act as though like partition was just kind of like a very reasonable agreeable solution from all sides that, yeah, this is, you know, the British kind of benevolently orchestrated this thing. And actually what it is was, and that's why, sorry, Carlos, but that's why I did correct Carlos when he said it was a British failure. It wasn't a failure. It was an intentional kind of a successful attempt to destabilize a region. To this day, partition of the subcontinent is the largest forced mass migration of people in history ever, to this day. And it created communal and regional violence that we're still seeing to this day. You know, when we see the tensions, we just spoke about it, between Bangladesh, between India and between Pakistan. All of that was really, really cemented through the processes of partition and kind of the aftermath of partition. The kind of Hindu phobia that we see in places like Pakistan and Bangladesh, the Islamophobia that we see in countries like India, the issue of Khalistan, all of these things were kind of, partition was like a site of precipitation for all of these issues. And it kind of, partition was, the way that partition was done made sure that these issues that continue to plague the people living in the subcontinent and the diaspora to this day. So to act as though that's a feasible solution to the issue of like Palestine and Israel is crazy, because you're not actually understanding the fact that it's not peaceful. It's not peaceful. Like, we literally, like, there is so much historical literature on the violence of partition, you know, like mass rape, mass murders, people, babies, children, women being beheaded, traveling from one place to another. It wasn't a neutral solution that's just like easily reached. And also on that, why is it Gazans that have to move?
Yeah, I think this is the thing as well. Like, when I saw this and I was like shocked that someone who is actually Indian is referencing partition as some sort of somewhat positive thing. Like, and I was literally like, if you know anything, you know how much of a overly devastating negative thing this actually was. Like, at the very least, livelihoods lost. At the very most, like, mass life lost. Lives. As well.
Entire villages were wiped out. Literally, entire villages, like, were wiped out through
partition. Bloodlines, villages, everything. It's such a horrific thing. And it kind of, it angered me, actually, to, like, read this and be like, why is this being used as, like, something that can actually be condoned and even endorsed? And it's the fact as well that this person, quote, is saying that the fact that these things have happened and seemingly everything is okay, it puts a spotlight on the world's double standard towards Israel. Like, saying, like, why are they, like, saying that it's not okay for Israel to out the Palestinians from their land when this has happened before and everything turned out all fine? No, it didn't. Like
why are we picturing partition as, like, framing it as something that is, like, the goal? That is, like, some kind of, like, a plan A type solution to any kind of, like, conflict.
Like, thumbs up to the British, actually. That was a very good thing that they did. Well done.
Yeah, and also, sorry, people actually just care about other people's livelihoods now, and everything has been broadcast on social media the last year and a half.
Yeah, and like to return to what you were saying before, Halima, it's not an exchange in any way. Like, even in India, for example, in British India, there might have been, like, it might not have been entirely even, but there were people from both sides that unfortunately were having to flee to hundreds of miles away in order to live. Whereas here, what you're seeing is just the ousting of the native Palestinians. Like, there's no equivalent. It's not like they're being, like, because, and also in regards to Trump's what he wants to do, he wants them to go and live in Egypt or Jordan, other neighboring countries. It's not like there's any Israelis there that are being told, you need to move over here. Like, well, the power dynamic isn't there.
Yeah, in every single conversation we have about this, the onus somehow is always on the Palestinians, firstly to resist and secondly to move. Like, what responsibilities do Israelis bear in this? Like, do they not bear the responsibility of non-violence? Do they not bear the responsibility to move? Do they not bear the responsibility to concede a nation state? Why is that all on the Palestinians? That's not a fair exchange.
Yeah, I just don't understand what... It's just sad, like I say, that a South Asian person could have actually written this and actually thought, this is...
It's giving Rishi Sunak, Priti Patel, Suella Braverman.
Well, the crazy thing is as well that it was, oh, sorry. It was Wall Street. I was going to say it's a Wall Street, like, they're supposed to be, like, a credible, reputable, like, publication. And it's, okay, cool, one person wrote it, but it went through, like, however many editors. Like, there was a whole process of getting that published. At no point did someone fact check. Like, it's a very common fact. It's a very common knowledge to know that partition was a horribly violent event that still has an impact on people today. At no point did anyone kind of have that insight to be like, wait, hang on, maybe this is bullshit. It doesn't make sense.
Interesting. Mr. Dume is the author of My Friend the Fanatic Travels with a Radical Islamist, which charts the rise of the radical Islamist movement in Indonesia. His next book will look at India's transformation since the election of Modi in 2014.
Okay. Can't respect a man who... Like, I just don't respect what he has to say.
Sigh. I just hope as well that anyone that is ignorant enough to not know the full extent of partition
actually doesn't agree with that
and actually takes on, it's like, you know what, good point, like, if this has happened before, why is it not, like, I think this is again showing the failings of, like, the fact that this history isn't taught, like,
that's exactly it. The reason that they published it is because they know that people are uneducated enough that they'll take their word for it that it was a good, respectable thing.
I mean, shout out to Priyamvada Gopal. I think, was she not one of your lecturers when you were at uni, Halima?
She was there when I was at uni, but she taught in the English department.
Okay. But yeah. Glad that some people are at least calling out bullshit when they see it. But yeah. Anyone got any positive things to round off the week? I know what's positive.
I'm starving. I need to go eat.
Okay, cool. I'll round this off quickly then. By the time this goes out, it's March. I've just come back from two holidays that were actually quite warm, so I'm very much, like, feeling now, like, yes, we're on a downwards thing towards summer now. Days are getting lighter. I feel very much ready for it to, like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
My drive today, although it was long, it was quite pleasant because the sun was out and it was, like, bright. So I was like, you know what, cool.
I love it. I
feel the depression, like, dissipating out of my body.
Big fan. Well, this time next week, we'll be live in the studio. So that's something to look forward to. Ooh. Fingers crossed, no technical difficulties. We'll see. Hee hee.
Bye, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.